This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
Well, Tony Bruschi is still on his honeymoon, so you got Robin Drake, and you're also going to have Todd with me today, our amazing producer. And so welcome to Hidden Killers Live. I am, as I said, Robin Drake. We're driving the bus for Tony while he's away on his honeymoon, and we're going to be covering a couple big stories today and big twists that came out over the weekend in the last couple days since we've been away. We start off what's going on now with the Rex Heuermann saga, and that is Alison Winter. And if you watch the Hulu doc, or Hulu, what was that on, Todd? I don't think it was on Hulu.
It was on Peacock.
Right. So we're going to be covering this one because if you watch that, and it was really compelling. Matter of fact, we did a deep dive with most of our guests on that one, including the great Siobhan Scott, about the therapist and the work the therapist was doing with him. Well, it turns out the therapist is not quite licensed to do what she did. So let's be talking about that and doing a deep dive. But we're going to be, Eric might be joining us because normally Eric Faddis is our defense attorney and former prosecutor, joins us on Thursdays. He's running a little bit late. Not sure if he's going to make it or not. But in the meantime, since this is such an unusual case, we can do a deep dive on that one. And so let's see where I left off here. Suffolk County Jail. She sat in sessions. This is, what's her face?
Alison Winter.
Alison Winter, she sat in sessions, including around the time of his private confession to Asa in Victoria, and now she's facing 18 felonies, grand larceny, scheme to defraud, and unauthorized practice of a profession for allegedly posing as a licensed clinical social worker and billing insurance companies for more than $60,000 while treating one of the most notorious serial killers in America, as well as the entire family. Eric Faddis is going to break this down legally, so we're going to do the best we can because we are not the legal beagles, but there's so much behavior at play here, and we've covered this case so extensively. So with that, first thing I really wanted to cover was Alison Winter wasn't licensed to practice clinically her social work independently in New York, yet she counseled Rex Heuermann week after week for nearly 3 years. How does someone like that, you think, without a license, get that kind of access inside? Any ideas, Todd?
Well, I mean, I'm sitting here thinking you're the behavior guy, right? And so my question to you, kind of based on that, is if you are Alison Winter and you're in this position, there's a Peacock documentary out there. You are in therapy sessions with a well-known possible serial killer at the time. He wasn't convicted or anything like that. And you know your license is not up to par. Why do you get so involved in it? Isn't this something that a normal person might back away from and say, I probably shouldn't be in this. I shouldn't be in the Google or in the documentary on Peacock. What kind of person is Alison Winter just from that perspective?
Yeah, and you hit a key word right in there, Todd. A normal person would back away from.
Right.
Because the extreme exposure she put herself out there for personally and professionally, it was compelling. And it really, when I first saw this yesterday, again, I didn't do a deep enough dive on her yet because I'm really interested. Anytime something goes sideways with someone, where they're doing something a bit out of that normal, they give us a wobble in what we're expecting, like she just did. First thing I'm doing is I'm looking at their lives, I'm looking at the people in their lives, and asking myself that question: what inspired them to take this action? Because for some reason, she thought this was in her best interest to do. God knows why, because the amount of exposure that she put herself out to personally and professionally was pretty profound. I mean, I don't know how you walk that back and ever even get licensed again because she's practicing. I mean, she's a complete fraud. Because I mean, now complete fraud is probably not entirely accurate because, as Siobhan said, she seemed to be giving some good counseling. Again, it was edited for TV and whatnot, but she's trained in this. She's just not licensed in this. So I'm wondering what her knowledge level of where she was at on that was as well.
We continue to run into situations where somebody within the story, but maybe off to the side, continually kind of does things, participates in a way that kind of messes things up. And, you know, you can look at the Nancy Guthrie case and you can question Sheriff Nanos and his intentions and his knowledge and ability to do his job. Becky Hill, the Alec Murdoch situation where she did something that turned that trial around and now there's going to be a retrial for Alec. Are we, you know, is this another situation of somebody who was within the circle of the case, but still kind of off to the side, who may have just done something that's going to allow Rex to possibly say, hey, wait a minute, after knowing this, I want to change my plea. I need to redo this thing.
Yeah, that's the real big question. There is the fact that I really wonder that was one of the reasons he confessed, because that's something for his lawyers to really wrestle with on this, is the fact that, all right, he confessed, he pled guilty, and if he can tie that confession to her compelling it, but she's now no longer licensed, I wonder if that does affect any appeal process. Granted, I mean, it's one of the reasons why we had the conjecture he confessed anyways, because they had him dead to rights. I mean, there's really no arguments, because, again, his confession, was more tied to his legal defense saying he should confess rather than Becky Hill. But at the same time, though, it might be a new lever of influence that they exercise on that. And I mean, it's such a strange thing that happens on this one. There is no doubt.
Look who's joining us this morning. It is Mr. Eric Faddis.
Hey, thank God, because we have so many legal questions on this one, Eric.
Good morning, Eric.
My apologies.
How are you?
Yeah, I thought that this wasn't happening because of the honeymoon or whatever, but I'm sorry. So I'm here.
No, hey, dude, it's the first day back. And I figure, you need to cover yourself better, Eric, because the reason you're slightly a little tardy is because you had to dress even more appropriately today.
that's right, Robin. That's right.
You are kicking it. did you have a chance to take a look at what we were talking about with having to deal with Huerman and this crazy therapist?
Very briefly, it was sent to me at 10:59 a.m. Mountain Time. So very briefly, but I'll be ready.
All right, so let me fill you in. So I'll redo the intro a little bit here for you. Because I'll dive right into the first question, which is going to be, how do you think this really impacts everything? So basically, here we go. Allison Winter counseled Rex Huerman. And that is, if you watch the Peacock doc, that's his counselor, them both for Asa and him. That's the one that was really predominant throughout that Peacock special. So she canceled Rex and his family for nearly 3 years inside the Suffolk County Jail. She sat in on sessions, including around the time of his private confession to Asa and Victoria. She's now facing 18 felonies, including grand larceny, scheme to defraud, and unauthorized practice of a profession, for allegedly posing as a licensed clinical social worker and billing insurance companies for more than $60,000 while treating one of the most notorious serial killers in America. So, Eric, based on your backgrounds of both a prosecutor and defense attorney, you know, she wasn't licensed to practice as a clinical social worker independently in New York, yet she counseled him week after week for nearly 3 years. How does someone without a license, first of all, get that kind of access to him? You know, because isn't that part of the hey, if you're going to go into the jail system and you have to have a reason and all that, or am I wrong?
You're right, Robin. And usually there is stricter vetting in terms of jail visits for high profile alleged serial killers. The institution is really strict and tight about who can go see these folks, in part because they don't want anything affecting the case. They don't want that person to get contraband, a number of concerns. And so to allow a person in there who is just sort of masquerading as a social worker when they do not have that licensure in that jurisdiction is a bit puzzling. Why, you know, does someone just go in and say, hey, you know, I'm a doctor, let me in and talk to this guy? And they say, oh, sure, right, go right ahead. That just seems like an odd way to do that.
Do you think that was more of a failure of the system, or do you think she was trying to manipulate or cajole her way in? I mean, what do you think the breakdown of that was to allow that to happen? Like, whose fault, or do you think it was mutual, or do you think she took advantage of a system that had a loophole in it?
I don't know for sure. I don't know all of the details, but my apprehension is that she had to present some information to the institution before they would just allow her to go meet with Rex. And so did that presentation contain some falsehoods, some fraudulent representations? It would seem, based on the charges and the reports, that it might have. And so that's certainly on her. On the flip side, the institution does have a duty, and it's really a safety and security concern to know who is going to visit their inmates, for what purpose, that they are lawfully accredited to do so. And it looks like those verification measures were not adequately put in place here.
So that kind of brings me down this other path I'm thinking, Eric. So here she is. She, for some reason, before you came out, I was telling Todd, you know, people always will act in their best interest, and it sometimes befuddle us of why they thought that was in their best interest to do things like this. Not just the charges that we just read, but with all the other people involved, all the other victims involved, does she really open herself up to any other civil lawsuits or anything from any of the other victims or anyone else involved because of the role she played in this?
You know, in order to have that kind of civil legal exposure, they would have to show that this allegedly fraudulent conduct caused them damages, that it caused them losses. And usually there has to be at least an economic component of those losses. It can't typically be pain and suffering only. And so I think it might be difficult to kind of show that direct causal link between these alleged fraudulent measures that this non-social worker took and some sort of losses sustained by the families. I think that would be an uphill battle.
Have you ever seen this before in your practice that you've been doing where someone in a – you have?
It's similar. I've seen similar circumstances. So when I was a prosecutor, Robin, we had a case for the unauthorized practice of medicine. And what it was in that case is that the person had their medical license suspended. And they said, the heck with the state, I'm going to continue practicing medicine. And you know, when they're not licensed, they're not under the same regulatory supervision, bad things can happen. And that person allegedly treated a number of patients because thumbing their nose at the state and that suspension. And so these things happen where professionals try to conduct very high-level professional services without the appropriate state accreditation, without the supervision, without the regulation. And you could be charged with a crime. It's very serious.
It's hard to imagine she was that obtuse that she didn't know what was going on or her licensing, you know, issues that she had. Do you think that she was playing or could be playing on some sort of loophole that was in there, or she wasn't? I mean, in other words, what would compel her to think this was a good idea?
You know, people charged with crimes are not always the most rational folks.
Yes,
and, you know, perhaps she saw dollar signs. Perhaps she saw fame. Perhaps she saw some kind of payoff to her and concluded that, hey, I've got the chops to engage in this kind of interaction with this person to elicit this information from an accused serial killer, which might be, which I might use for any number of reasons. And so those sorts of motivations can override a person's reason and caution and prudence if that person has any to begin with.
Yeah. And so right there in the Peacock documentary, she's right there as a family confronts the truth. Legally, does her unlicensed status open a door for Huerman or his family to go challenge anything that comes across from those sessions that she had?
Good question. I'm not 100% sure on that. My thinking would be that there are physician-patient privileges. Some states have physician-therapist privileges, whereby you can't confide in a therapist some incriminating information, then have that therapist go tell the world without your consent. Now, the fact that they weren't a real therapist or a real licensed social worker at the time, I don't think that vitiates the reason behind the therapist-patient privilege. And I think that Rex could have some kind of remedy for, disclosing these alleged secrets in what he thought was sort of a confidential environment when lo and behold, this person was not a licensed therapist. And so it's possible that he could try to take some measure.
Yeah. And so let's flip it to your defense attorney hat on this one. So going down that road, if you're his defense attorney, knowing that this pretty egregious transgression just happened, what's the first steps you're doing and exploring? Does this help an appeal process? Does it negate anything? I mean, what are you doing as a lawyer with your client in this moment?
It's so tough, Robin, because of Rex's decision to enter the guilty plea. When a person is convicted at trial, then there's an appellate review, and the defense can bring out everything under the sun. They could say, hey, you know, just like this, he thought he was talking to a licensed social worker and he was duped. He was conned into providing this information. But on the flip side, when a plea is entered, that is much more sacrosanct. That is much more difficult to challenge. And so these sort of complaints like, oh, I feel like this person duped me, and I don't like that. An appellate court's not going to give that any weight at all. Undoing such a guilty plea is immensely difficult, and I don't think that this is going to give Rex any traction.
Would Rex have any traction if he said, listen, I was in these therapy sessions, and in my conversations with my therapist, that's where I decided that I was going to take the plea of guilty? Does he have anything with that at all, or is that still just way out of line?
Gosh, you know, my thinking, Todd, is that that is not going to be his saving grace here. Even though, you know, a person is entitled to a legal process devoid of constitutional errors, but they're not entitled to a perfect legal process. And errors happen like all that. The time. And so long as they are not of a constitutional magnitude and do not justify overturning what was already finalized at the trial court level, he's not going to be able to, this is not going to be some sort of Hail Mary where he's going to all of a sudden be free. No way.
He kind of screwed himself by confessing and pleading guilty, maybe.
Or doing all the things that he did. He kind of screwed himself by doing that.
That's too. Beside the point. Yeah. But I mean, just legally on the appeal process. So last kind of question on this one, Eric, that is, so the prosecutors say that she billed Cigna and United Healthcare and Medicare for tens of thousands of dollars in this insurance fraud. Or does the fact that she was treating a serial killer while unlicensed make it something worse than that, just on the insurance fraud side, do you think?
I think that in terms of insurance fraud cases, this one's going to be looked at really severely. We have sort of this scourge of fraud federally and locally and everything else in our country. And when we're talking about someone who is, it's really manipulating the process in a way that manipulates people. It's not just sort of, you know, filing some paperwork and getting some money wrongfully. It's manipulating a human being, even if it's Rex Herman, it's a human being who's unpopular. It's playing with their emotions. It is deceiving them. And I think that those types of insurance fraud cases are taken much more seriously than, oh, this person filled out some paperwork wrong and got some money.
I can't even imagine what was going through her mind, and going through her mind now is she just totally hosed herself over, which could have been, you know, I think a really good moment in her professional and personal career of what she was doing, especially, you know, on the path of trying to help Asa back from the brink of crazy town and living in his bedroom that she remodeled. Anyway, life is stranger than fiction sometimes. Your thoughts and comments in the section on Substack and YouTube. We'd love for you to weigh in. Links are in the description. Make sure to like and follow wherever you get your podcast.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.